literally took her probably 4 hours to get me out of the house because I couldn't move. And sure enough, I went to the ER and they kept me there I was 12 hours there. And they tested me and still came back negative for COVID because I took two tests. I took a test prior to that and it came back negative. And that's why I thought, oh, you know, it's just a really, really bad flu at first. And the doctor, they sent an X-ray down machine down into the ER where I was. And they took the X-ray there and they said, yeah, you definitely have a really advanced pneumonia. We're going to keep you here. And we're going to treat you like you have COVID. The doctor just told us that. And they put liquids into me. They dehydrated me hydrated me. And they were starting to give me some medication and I was stuck in there. There was nowhere to put me. I slept on the floor for 12 hours in that room. There was no bed. There wasn't anything but a chair. And then they put me up and they finally got me into a bed down in emergency, but I wasn't there very long. I was hallucinating and I had every symptom you can imagine. I wasn't good at all. And then it kept progressing and progressing. And I don't remember much of that. Remember they put me up into a ward at that point, a COVID ward, and they were just giving me oxygen and some medication at that point. And I was pretty out of it. Then I do remember at some point they said, we got to take you to the ICU because I was having a lot of trouble breathing. And that's when they had to put me on a high flow oxygen. And that's when they took me down there. And then things got way blurrier for me. A lot of hallucinations, timelines are gone.
Right.
I remember the conversation about having to ventilate me. And I remember calling Julia about it, but that was a really short-lived conversation because I couldn't breathe. The next thing I know, I was gone.
And that was it. Like you were gone. Incubated and you can't.
Yep. I don't remember any of it until I was starting to come out. I came out at one point, I started coming out of it and I was just in a really, really bad way. And they had to put me under again, because I think at that point I was trying to pull tubes out of my mouth and stuff, which is a natural reaction.
Right. Yeah.
And then I remember being tied up at one point, probably when I first came out of it. But it's really foggy and it's hard to determine what was real and what wasn't real because there's a lot of night terrors. There's a lot of hallucination. There's a lot of delirium and paranoia too, because with COVID, you can't see anybody. You think people are out to harm you. It's just not a good thing.
Yeah. It sounds horrible. And you know, you and I are good friends. We're like family to one another. So, you know, we can make little jokes back and forth about it, but it really isn't something that is a joking matter to others. And I like to just say that right now, cause you and I make light of, you know, pain and darkness. Cause that's just, we joke about things.
Oh yeah, of course. Even when you were the first call I made, you know, when I was finally able to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was even, I needed that laugh because it was a pretty dark time, you know?
Yeah. And I threatened to kill you.
You did.
As soon as I saw you, I said, when I see you, I'm going to murder you. Yeah. For what you just did to everybody. But, but coming out of it, you know, you were telling me on the phone, you were like, I can't taste anything. They gave me a banana and I can't taste anything. I need a salt shaker. I'm like, who puts salt on a banana? You know?
Well, my whole taste was, everything was gone. Everything was messed up. Obviously I was drinking nothing but water in there. And then I craved, you know, like a Diet Coke, for example, just for something different. I had to have something different. So I had Julie, you know, try to sneak me one in once she could finally see me. And so she brought me one and I cracked it thinking, okay, this is going to be familiar, but no, it was just awful. Everything was awful.
Everything tastes awful.
For about a month. Yeah.
Right. So, but when you came out of it and you're starting to like your surroundings, you're realizing that this is when you're through what you've gone through, your body, you're obviously weak because you've been lying there for so many weeks. And then how did you take the comprehension of that? This became a national news story that, you know, here's the drummer.
I had no idea. Ed.
here's the drummer from the Kill, you know, founding member of the Killjoys. Here's the leader of the Unteens and also another band, Junior Achiever, and you know, from the Monday Nuns. I mean, you've had this storied career in music, and it makes national news.
Well, there was the one time that Julie was able to get into the ICU to see me, and it was really short lived because they didn't really want anyone in there. In fact, I don't even know how she did it. So, you know, she had to suit up like everybody else. And so she did get in, and I was pretty out of it, mind you. But she said, one of the first things she said is, "I got to tell you something." She said, "You're all over the news." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" So she just basically showed me one article just to Google it and say, this is what they're telling you. I just don't want, you know, someone else in here to tell you about it. Yeah. And it was obvious because, you know, the nurses and stuff, it was all over the news, and the nurses and people, they would say, oh, they were really respectful. And they said, "Oh, I saw you on the news." And you know, people that might walk by the ICU window would look in at me, and I could just tell something was a little bit different. But they were very, very respectful, and they promised me that there would be, you know, my total privacy and stuff. It was good.
Yeah. But I think, you know, Julie and your immediate friend group handled it really well. Everyone was like super supportive, and it was nice to see that friends come together and family.
Yeah, definitely. That meant a lot for sure.
I was going to ask a question that the emotional comprehension level after that, like at some point, did you have to talk to like mental health people? Like, because I try to put myself in your position, and I think I'm good. I would need someone to talk to aside from my peer.
Well, yeah, you know, they warned me. Well, there's, to answer your question about comprehending it. First of all, when it did get go national and stuff, I had my phone, so I could read some things in the hospital, and I could see all the posts people were, you know, sending out to me, or Julie would call me and say, "I've talked to this person, and literally everyone from every band, from the smallest to the biggest across Canada, reached out to me in some form. They found ways to get to my messenger. They found ways to find Julie. You name it, I probably talked to them, and that was really overwhelming. And to have that support was amazing, because it seemed that I was the, you know, up to that point, we didn't really hear about many musicians, you know, especially our age bracket, that even contracted this, never mind were on a ventilator. And so I sort of became the face of the person in that sector.
Right.
So that was overwhelming. And then to answer your other question about having to deal with it, when I was leaving the hospital, there was a basically the hospital counselor. They said, you know, a lot of people that go through what you did have to, probably have some anxiety. You'll have some depression, possibly PTSD. And, you know, we're here to support you in any way for counseling or whatever it is that you need. And I thought, I'm good. I just want to go home. So I went home, and, I did have some anxiety. I certainly felt really heavy about everything that happened. Anxiety because I was sent home. I didn't have any medication. I didn't need oxygen. But the first few nights, I felt when you have that much hands-on being in the ICU and in the hospital for as long as I was, you really depend on those people. And they were incredible. The whole nursing staff were absolutely incredible. And so when I was at home, I thought, okay, well, I don't have oxygen. Well, what if I run into a problem? What am I going to do? That was my anxiety thinking. I can't breathe? I don't have anything here. Yeah. And so the first few nights were a little bit spooky, but you know, I got over it. I had, you know, I checked my oxygen and everything every day, and I was where I should be. I had no energy. I couldn't get up the stairs. I'd have to take a break. You know, I'd do a few, and I'd have to stop. Your mind thinks you can do it. It's like, oh, I'm going to go get a drink of water. I can see it in my head. I can picture me going there, but to actually physically get up and try to move, and you know, no energy, the room spinning because you're dizzy. It's a game changer. You know, it really takes a lot to get that back.
You made a great point earlier that this is a, you know, because you are 50, 51 in that area, 52,
three.
And at that point during this pandemic, this was something that was hitting people in their 70s and their 80s or 90s, that sort of thing. It wasn't really in our age group, and you did become the poster boy for it. So I think that it, I think that kind of scared all of us that this was moving.
Not
this
only that, real thing. At that time, if you think about it, for us anyway, when we talked about it amongst ourselves, it was, we never really knew anybody that had it. We, you know, we might've heard of like a, well, my friend's second cousin's neighbor got it. And you're like, oh, okay. That's awful. Sorry to hear that. But no one really close to us. And then it just hit. It hit us, this area, hard anyway, I think.
Yeah.
I feel like either something changed within the actual virus itself, and or else it just was that rapid. I don't know. I can't answer that because I have no preconditions, nothing at all whatsoever. I never got sick ever. And that's why, you know, Julie really took it seriously when I was sick, because I just don't get sick, knock on wood, with, you know, I'm not the one to get colds and flus.
Right. Yeah. It's just not something that's part of your nature. As long as I've known you, for you to get, even
I get
flu,
sick of you once in a while, but
not once in a while, pretty much all the time, actually. So, hey, you're listening to Steel City Music. I'm your host, Gunner. My special guest right now is my dear friend, Gene Champagne. You know him from the Killjoys, the Unteens, Junior Achiever, Monday Nuns, and the drummer for Teenage Head. We're just having a quick chat about coming back from COVID after all this time. So that happened in the early part of March. And then we have a couple months where you're at home, you're trying to rebuild your strength, that sort of thing. And we're getting into summer, and you're out and about, and you finally get back to work, that sort of thing. And you said earlier, there's so much trauma that goes on with your body, and mentally, emotionally, all of these things to get back, to build yourself up again. At what point?
I have to say that the mental aspect was definitely as much as the body.
Yeah.
Definitely. And talking about counseling, I didn't ever do counseling, although it took a month to process and fill in timelines and get answers that I needed. And, I was lucky to have friends to talk to, and Julie was really supportive, and, you know, she knew I was going down a different path and starting to feel better when I was able to talk about other things, and I looked forward to other things rather than try to comprehend what the hell just happened, you know?
Well, that's where I was leading to. The change comes, you're lucky enough that you had a good support system. But now when because I've always, like, you know, I'll always send you the odd message, like, you written anything, have you played anything, have you listened to anything that's music wise. And just recently I caught a post of you explaining on Facebook about sitting behind a kid again for the first time.
Yeah. You know, when I was sick, well, leading up to that, if you know, my post basically said, It's been a rough couple of years, probably for so many, because of live music being shut down. For me, it was tough because we did our last Teenage Head show, be two Christmases ago, I guess. And I played that show. My mother just passed away. And the day after that, I said my final goodbye, I had to play that show. And it was an empty show for me. I played it anyway. And then that was it. We knew we were going to take a hiatus because we've been filming for the documentary there, Picture My Face documentary.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, we're going to take a break anyway. We've been playing pretty steady for, you know, 4 years, and we've had a crew with us the entire time filming. Let's just stop, reset. And when the documentary comes out, we'll be able to sync things up with it and tour it. And, you know, it'll be a great thing to work. Well, COVID happened, lockdowns happened. I had my mother passing, and everything just shifted gears. And in my post, I just said, I couldn't even look at an instrument. I just had no hope. I didn't care about it. Then I got sick, just made things worse. Although when I was sick, all I could think about is being, hopefully getting lucky enough that I can breathe when I finally get through this other side, be able to not, you know, obviously at that point I couldn't even walk because I've been laying there so long. And I had to work that back. I'm thinking, oh, I hope there's no issues. I hope I don't have any long haul issues. I just want to play. I want to get back to my family, my dog, my friends. And of course, playing was on my mind, and that was what I wanted to do. I'm like, I'm going to work really hard to do it. And I got home and I recovered. And for a long time, even when I was starting to feel better, I was actually scared to play drums because I thought I'm going to do it, but I don't want to be set up for disappointment. In my head, I could do it. I think I should be able to do this, but I was scared to do it because I was thinking, okay, yeah, sure, I can play for a minute. What happens if I have to try to play a half an hour and I can't breathe, or I don't have the stamina? I didn't want to set myself up for disappointment. So it took me a long time to sit down and do it. And then when I finally did, I thought I could do this. I played for a little while just by myself with some headphones on, and it felt really good. And I thought, okay, I can do this. I'm back. So I got to work out a little bit, you know, get my chops back. But that was sure a good feeling.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be to get that breath, to get that little extra kick in there, to be able to drum again, you know. Okay, so what about guitar and writing, that sort of thing? Because I mean, you were the main driver for Junior Achiever, you know, all the stuff with the Unteens, that sort of thing. Sure, yeah, your drumming is back. You could possibly do a Teenage Head Show if that ever happens in the next year and a half or whatever.
Sure, or, you know, hopefully, you know, the Killjoys do something too, you know. They're, that's never off the table, and, you know, we're all talking about things, and, you know, after something like what I went through, you know, brings people together. And I think, you know, we all got through that, you know, you, Mike and Shelley, even though we don't see each other from, for periods of time, when something affects any one of us, because we're family, we're all there instantly, you know, and that was a huge thing. So I think it made us all a bit closer.
Yeah, it definitely did when you got sick, because I was sending messages to Mike saying, hey, this is what's going on, and myself and our other dear friend Dave Pomfret, who was in the Monday Nuns, who you grew up with.
Yeah.
And Mike grew up with, really, from back in, geez, I don't know, the Stony Creek Green Acres days, really.
Yep.
That sort of thing. So it does bring everyone closer. And that's, I'm glad that you brought that up, because Again, I didn't even know that you had coffee with Mike. And then I caught a photo of you guys on Facebook. It's like catching up pre-post COVID kind of thing. How did that go down? Because before COVID, you guys weren't really talking.
No, we weren't talking.
You had
we
a falling out. Everyone had a big falling out.
Yeah, we, you know, it's sort of like brotherly love where, you know, you still love each other, but that day you just want to kill each other.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, it brought us all together, and we, you know, we had a coffee and we just talked about things, had some good laughs, and basically want to look forward to something in the future, because, man, life can be short, you know, anything could happen. And it's so important. You know, I think about my friends that have lost band members, you know, like in Teenage Head, that how much effect that has on everybody, that we lost Frank and Dano and Junkhouse. To have those people in your life and to be able to play with them is so incredible. You never want to lose that or take that for granted. So if something comes from the Killjoys, I'd be thrilled, you know? And I think I think we'll maybe aim for something.
Right. Hey, when you were, not just to jump all over the timelines of our conversation, just to remind everyone, you're listening to Steel City Music. I'm your host, Gunnar. My special guest right now is Gene Champagne, musician from of a ton of bands here in Hamilton. And the next band we're going to talk about is a Junior Achiever. Okay. And while you were sick, I was chatting with Dave Fritz and Knowles and
Steve.
We got a hold of the other guy, Steve, and we actually had a Zoom chat.
Okay.
And we did an hour about Junior.
An hour of mockery.
Yeah. And basically what it was is like, it was therapy for us to talk about Junior Achiever and going to Japan, how it all started, the show at the Horseshoe, getting that show, and then you driving around in the giant tour bus trying to drive a Japanese band around North America, and helping them out promote that band here. To us, it was a bit of therapy, because we were all like joking about all the fun stuff, that sort of thing. But I left it with them, and I said towards the end of it, because we talked about an hour, we played some Junior Achiever tracks. I said, you know, this band was I don't think it ever had its comeuppance in regards to, it could have been a lot bigger. It was a good band.
Yeah,
and, I think so too. And it's weird, because when you go back and you start listening to it, you're like, you know, when the album came out back in the 2000s, around 2003, 2004, 2005, that era, or a little bit around, just in that era of music, you guys sounded great. It was something that you put together. And I was telling them that it was like, you know, you were coming off the Killjoys and you had questions, you know, can I do my own music without that other circle of friends, Mike and Shelley? You know, who am I? That sort of thing.
Well, but
I told them, I said, you know, would it hurt to do another Junior Achiever album when Gene comes out of this? Because we believed you were going to come out of it, and you did.
I never say never. That's for sure. But Junior Achiever, after the Killjoys, you're exactly right. I didn't have, you know, after we just said, okay, let's just take a break for a while. We never broke up. We just kind of took a break that lasted a long time. There was no animosity. We didn't say, okay, you're an asshole, I'm leaving. It was never any of that. You know that. We just got out of the van one day and walked our own ways and said, okay, we'll see you in a bit. Well, a bit lasted a long time. And at that point, I didn't know what to do with myself. I wanted to still play music, and I wasn't the main songwriter, obviously, but I still had to get something out of me. So I started writing, and that's how Junior Achiever came about. I just finished a bunch of songs, and I didn't expect anything from it. I just wanted it to be an outlet. And the timing was always near misses for that band, because it was, think about it, it was sort of during the MySpace time.
Yeah.
And it did have potential. It had lots of potential. I sold all the music to TV, which sort of funded the CD. And then, so when it came out on Degrassi, for example, MySpace would blow up, and we could tell exactly where it was being aired, because all of a sudden in California, we'd get all these hits. When are you coming to California? When are you coming to New Jersey? When are you coming to, New York? You could see where it was airing, and you could see it would just blew up. But we didn't have a CD at that point. We were too, it was ahead of us. So then we finally funded the CD with that money, and we had a full CD. We were mixing it, and a Japanese label got a hold of us and said, we want to put it out. Okay, great. That's great. We were getting ready to ship it, basically. We were mastering at that point. Got another call from Japan saying, well, why don't you come on over and open up for a band there? They were sort of like the No Doubt of Japan at that time, kind of a ska punk thing. And they played probably about 2,000 seaters or so. We're like, holy smokes, that's our first gig. Okay, sign me up. So that's exactly what we did. So it was, we were really, really fortunate to have that. In Canada, we just did a handful of club shows, but we certainly had more legs in Japan. That's for sure.
But you said that the band was clicking internet, like down in the States, you did the Japan thing. That band had a lot of promise to it. And then, I mean, you had a touring bus company that you had to run at the same time.
Yeah, that kind of fell at me, and I had to run that, and I had to depart, because when that company was growing, I was also driving at that point and starting out, and I was gone. I was gone for 5 years straight, basically. And near the end, when I finally got out of it, I was trying to get drivers to take over and start driving some buses and stuff. And I wanted to pull back, but it was just a lot going on. And I just finally said, I've had enough. I don't want to do it anymore. I want to play. And I just got rid of it and started playing again.
Yeah. And then that leads us to the Unteens, or was there any other side projects that you
No, Tung Fu, actually.
Tung Fu, that's right.
Yeah, it was Lou that kind of put that together. He just got a bunch of musicians together. There was Gordy and me and Dave Ellie, Greg Briscoe. Am I missing anyone? Rob Sweeney. And that was my first introduction to really playing again. So I kind of got to thank Lou for that, because I hadn't played an instrument in 5 years, right?
Right.
And it was nice to start playing drums again and, you know, get acquainted with those guys. And then, that was Gord sort of took off, and here I am now in Teenage Head, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You took over the kit for Jack Pedler, because Ped got sick.
Exactly. He got sick, and I got a call like 2 days before a festival, and Gordy said, can you do it? And I said, I'm in. And
Can you do it? My God, if he had any idea of between you and Pomfret, who was the biggest Teenage Head freak in Hamilton?
Yeah, no, it was fun, but it was daunting, because, you know, your first show is a festival, and you have 2 days to, you know, the songs in your head, you know, I've known them for a long time, but to actually sit down and play it with no rehearsal, It was interesting, but we did it, and it was a lot of fun.
I like that, the fact that you only took you 2 days. It just shows that you're slowing down.
Yeah.
That's all. Maybe you can keep time now when you're doing it. Okay. Hey, you're listening to Steel City Music. I'm your host, Gunnar, and I'm talking to my good pal, Gene Champagne. Now you're coughing after us talking about COVID. Nice. Very good.
Yeah. I'm just shooting it your way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm double vaxxed. So, you know, and to go back to a reference that I made to Dave Pomfret when you were sick, I thought it was an excellent idea, and also to raise awareness. Not that he had to, but there was the, what do you say? When he designed a t-shirt, just a simple drawing, and he sold a ton of them to everyone around in Southern Ontario. It was like a simple drawing of you.
A drawing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great that he did that.
It was, and I can't thank him enough for doing that. Originally, you know, we had some people say, you know, we want to set up a GoFundMe, and Julian and I were like, no, we don't want a GoFundMe or anything like that. We'll be okay. And Dave just took it upon himself to do that instead of a GoFundMe, and it was a really cool idea. The shirt looks great. And what I love about it most is, one, it certainly did help me, you know, help me and Julie hugely, unexpectedly. You know, bills kept piling up, and that certainly helped. And the really cool thing that it sort of became its own animal in that people stood behind it. And when they got their vaccines, they'd wear the shirt, they'd take their picture. And what a beautiful thing to see. Just really brought a little community together, that's for sure. And it turned into something else, you know. It was a statement. I loved it.
Yeah, I don't think that Never Never Dave gets enough credit, so... this is me actually admitting I'm giving him some credit.
Okay. He deserves it.
He does. He definitely does deserve it. Okay. So, you know, we talked about the Giddy Band, the Kit, and the other bands, the chronology, if you will, of what's happening between, you know, getting together with the Killjoys, Never Say Never, about doing another show, another album, that sort of thing. But where are you at mentally? Have you written anything? Have you had any ideas? Are there any bands inspiring you music-wise?
I always have lots of snippets in my head. I'm anxious to put to start playing some guitar, because I haven't done that yet either. And just kind of work on these ideas. And usually I record some sort of a demo and I'll play some drums on it. And that's what I want to do, is start making some demos, seeing if I like the songs, turning them into something, and then decide how I want to take it, whether I want to, you know, pitch it to the Killjoys, or whether I want to do something myself, or will it become an Unteen song? It was not until I get it a little further along will I see where it fits. I haven't done anything just a solo thing either. And that'd be, that's something I want to do before I leave this earth too, is just at least have a couple solo songs.
Oh, like put out like a little EP of just
solo EP tracks. Just even if it's, you know, just me in a demo format where I play everything and I put all my ideas together. I'd like to even just do that and make it just for Bandcamp even. I don't know, but just to get it out there.
Gene, we talked about that about 25 years ago.
Oh, did we?
Yes, we did. We were in the van I actually remember this conversation, and you said, yeah, I'll do a little like a little acoustic thing, jammer, it'll be great, you know. I'll do, you know, I don't know, I'm just thinking about it, right? You know, maybe I'll do a couple songs. And I said, what are you going to call it? Acoustic, a no-no? Because both of us were so heavy into like a full band rock and roll, we hated acoustic music.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
And I said, acoustic, a no-no. And then, so now you're telling me now at the age of 53 that you want to do an acoustic, a no-no album.
No, I don't want to do an acoustic, a no-no album. It'll be me. I'll play everything on it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. That makes sense then. Yeah. Because I just can't see you at the same time.
I might have an acoustic guitar just for you now.
Well, yeah. You probably will do an acoustic, a no-no album. That's the thing. That's so funny. I'm just trying to picture you up on stage with an acoustic guitar and
the worst nightmare.
Yeah. It'd be just the whole nightmare of me trying not to heckle and you heckling yourself as you're doing the songs, trying to take yourself serious, is next to impossible.
Yeah. It'd be an I'm out of here moment.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, this last thing you know, it need is the God of Thunder to show up at the show. Ray to sit in the front, you know, go, oh, look at you, you chimp, you know?
Yeah. I don't need that.
Well, I'm glad that you, you're feeling better and you're starting to get the wherewithal of playing again. And, I look forward to hearing what comes out of you. And I look forward to hearing that maybe you'll be working with Dave Fritz and the other guys again, because I told you a while back, this Droid Dosaka thing that Dave Fritz is doing, it's killer.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Absolutely. Yeah, I could see something happening, you know, a little bit down the road.
Can't put me on the shelf. then take me down again when you feel like myself. I come undone when I'm too tight. I know that I'm wrong and you were right. I can't look you in the face. That far, longing for some better days. But
Baby. Getting bored with the same old? Change is coming to CIOI, November 1st at noon.